Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello, this is the China Sports Insider Podcast. My name is Haik Balian, and I hope you are having a great summer. The China Sports Insider Podcast is on our summer schedule, so expect a new interview every couple of weeks. Today, Mark and I speak with Yonina Chan. Yonina is the Women's Division Head of Self-Defense at Krav Maga Global in China. One of the reasons we wanted to talk to her is that she wrote a thought-provoking piece about that awful Tangshan incident from a couple of weeks ago. I really enjoyed this conversation and I learned a lot, and I think you will too. We spoke to Yonina on WeChat audio from her gym.
Tell us about your kind of your, I mean, you've been doing Krav Maga now for a while. Tell us exactly kind of, you know, briefly for people who don't know what it is and how you got involved and through your husband as well.
Yeah, so just to give a bit of a background, Krav Maga, it's an Israeli self-defense and combat style. It's one of the more practical combat styles. So basically, no competition. There's no sport aspect to it. You can grade up in levels, but essentially it's meant to be like a very direct, very no nonsense approach to like essentially street fighting and defending yourself. It's used by the military, the Israeli military. This is their main combat style. But now it's around the world. Like from what I know is there are law enforcement, security, and even military personnel and departments around the world that have been trained in Krav Maga. And apart from that, there's a civilian form. The main difference between the military and the civilian form is, well, we don't kill people in the civilian version of Krav Maga. we consider the legal aspect of self-defense, and so it's tailored to each country. So how escalation of force is used in each country, this matters to us. So it's a whole system that includes like not just the physical skills, but just the situational awareness, the legal aspects, and even like it includes things like practical safety. That's a huge part of it as well.
You know, one of the big talking points in China, really, in Chinese society over the last few weeks was this horrific incident in Tangshan that I'm sure many of our listeners will have witnessed, where it was basically a brawl between a bunch of men effectively attacking some female diners at a restaurant, and some pretty horrible footage of that's been released and a lot of reaction to it. You wrote a piece, a really good piece, dissecting this in detail and got some pretty good pickup on that. What stood out to you about this incident and the subsequent reaction online?
That Tangshan incident, it was like when the footage went viral, it hit the internet pretty hard. There was immediately a lot of reaction from netizens all over China. You could see it on the Zhihu forums. You saw it, like you saw commentary, like the commentary on Douyin, Baidu Weibo. There was a lot, and a lot of people had very, very strong reactions to it. when we saw the footage, actually, there's an interesting story that we actually didn't see it immediately. The night the footage, that was, I think it was a Wednesday or a Thursday evening, the night the footage came out, we had not seen it yet, but we started getting a lot of inquiries. People were adding our WeChat, calling us. And we usually, when something like this happens, we're like, oh, something must have happened. So we checked the news, and then we saw all the footage about Changshan. When we had a moment to review this, it was my husband and I. So he's the director of Krav Maga here in, like, KMG, Krav Maga Global. It's a major Krav Maga organization. He's a director of it for China. I'm the women's self-defense division head. And we both took a good look at the footage. A lot of the reaction was, you know, this is gender-based violence, which in a way it is. But once we watched the whole thing through, it's very much representative of, like, being or group violence. And it's honestly, it's a very difficult thing to deal with, extremely difficult. It might have started as, like, almost a women's self-defense situation, because you see, you know, sexual harassment, you see like a guy not being able to take a no and kind of going at a woman. But then when it escalates, like, this falls under the category of multiple attacker and close quarter multiple attacker. It's very, very difficult. We would almost venture to say it's like a more advanced situation that they were dealing with, to be honest.
What do you mean by advanced? Like, what made it an advanced situation?
Okay, so when you start training any kind of defensive art, any kind of Krav Maga, or any, just not apart from Krav Maga, any defensive art, you first start with learning how to deal with one opponent. You usually start in a fairly open space, and you start with maybe a few basic attacks. This one, everybody focused so much on, oh, when she was slapped, she should have done this. When her hair was grabbed, she should have done this. On a basic level, yes, there are defenses to slaps, there are defenses to hair grabs. What happened here is the context. So that this context was pretty much, she had her back against the exit. So her back was like, they were almost like, their table was kind of against the wall. The attacker was covering the exit. And here's the thing, she thought probably she was dealing with one attacker, but very, very quickly, the guy had friends and they started coming in and attacking all of them. And there's a few things that make this advanced. One is the fact that it's multiple attacker. What makes it even more advanced is that they didn't know it was multiple attacker. The other thing is there are so many bystanders, but they couldn't tell who was a bystander, who was an attacker. It was almost impossible to tell, especially at the start. And then the other problem that she's encountering is she has friends. When you're just defending yourself, that's one thing. But if you're actually dealing with multiple people, you're having to worry about them. So you run, fine, you defend the slap, you run. What about your friends? Are you just going to leave them to their fates? Is that how it is? So it's very, very complicated that way. And all these problems together, like, it would be a fairly advanced situation.
Yanina, you mentioned you were your head of the female division for Krav Maga. So let me ask you, when you look at this incident and similar things to this, is this primarily, you know, attack and defense and what you do, or is it, you know, a male, female, gender violence type situation? You know, can you separate the two things? How do you see that? Because there was a lot of commentary that I saw and some state media in particular, some not particularly good stuff, basically saying, oh, well, you know, we should all be appalled by this, and trying to skirt over the issue of that this was clearly an attack of a group of men on a group of women. When you look at this thing, how do you separate those strands in something that is sort of so multi-layered like this?
Here's the thing. When you look at, like, to be clinical about it, there are different categories of violence. There is gender-based violence. There is like group attacks. There are predatory violence. There's like the monkey dance, you know, social violence, these kind of things. And there's definitely overlap between them. While the situation, it's very clearly gender-based at the start. It's a man harassing a woman. When it escalates, we look at it as a group violence situation. What does that mean? When we talk a lot about gender-based violence. And here's the tricky thing about gender-based violence. So you'd normally think of gender-based violence as things like, I don't know, domestic violence, sexual harassment. And more because like it's more reported that women or more known that women experience these issues. In truth, like these are all, we the way we look at it, all self-defense is male and female. It's just that the start or the escalation of certain attacks may be more specific to, it's done in a certain way, it's most likely going to be women experiencing it, if you understand what I mean. So for example, getting something like getting grabbed in the butt, for example, this is sexual harassment. I mean, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen to men. It's probably less reported, but it's more categorized as female, or it's a problem that women will run into more than men. Just like we would say, like if it was a more guy problem, say it's a social violence situation where a guy sees another guy at a bar, says like, what you looking at, da 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 da, that kind of thing. It would be a little more characteristic of men. So in this sense, when we look at how a problem starts or escalates, we look at, okay, this gender will probably experience this more. That gender will probably experience this more. But after that, where it goes is slightly different. So after that, we look at, okay, what type of situation is this? Is this a weapon attack? Is this a close quarter attack? Is this a group violence attack? So this one, we qualify as close quarter and group violence, which are two fairly difficult situations. It seems to be completely empty-handed, meaning we saw like found weapons. So there was a chair thrown around, there was a bottle thrown around, but it's essentially like empty-handed attacks. They were punching and kicking her, basically. So the attackers did not have weapons on them. So it was a multiple attacker situation in a close quarter environment with the extra problem of what we would call VIP protection, or protecting a third party because she had friends with her. So if we look at it from a very clinical perspective, that's how we look at it. The start is, it is gender-based, but then it escalates to this whole thing. And looking at it as like, looking at it just from the gender-based perspective, it forgets so many things. And part of the problem is understanding violence here and the small differences between types of violence. It's not, the understanding of violence is not as nuanced here in China. So you see a lot of people, like when they make the commentary, it's very grouped in. Like, oh, it's this or it's that or it's this, it's that. So you should have done this and it would have solved that, this kind of thing, if you know what I mean. So that's more of the problem. It feels to me there's an attempt to understand this, but honestly, it fails on so many levels because there's no nuance at all in the discussion.
So let's add some of that nuance, Yunina. Like, because perhaps, like, I have to admit, like, I started watching the video, but I couldn't finish it. I just couldn't watch it. It was just so disturbing to me. And so what are we missing here? What is that nuance that you're talking about? You know, one of the things you brought up in your piece was this concept of victim shaming and how you wanted to avoid that. That's not what you're talking about. As you were watching that video, did you put yourself in the situation of those victims and what you might have, you know, what you might have seen that they didn't?
Okay, so this is a very complicated.
It is, yeah.
Difficult to answer this. It's very difficult to answer this question because, and we always say this. We get asked, like, yeah, what would you do if that happened to you? And that question starts crossing over to what should this woman have done? It's very, very, very important to not, like, while we're trying to understand the situation and how to get away from it or how to avoid it, we don't say, oh, she should have done this, she should have done that. And we shouldn't imply that she was in any way at fault for what happened to her. That's what victim blaming is, essentially. Like, victim blaming is all about assigning part or whole of the blame to this woman for what happened to her. It is 100% the perpetrator's fault. You know, it's his, it's all on him. We can't say like, oh, this woman should have realized it was a danger and not been there. This woman should have blocked that and rammed him and made it to the exit. that's a very fine line, and we all have to understand that line we shouldn't cross. It's a very hard line not to cross, but we shouldn't. And it's very hard for most people to talk about what we should have done without crossing that line, without end up saying like, oh, she should have done this, she should have done that. So that before anything, like, it's really important to say like, she did the best that she could, given her level of training, which is probably none, given her inability, inexperience with this kind of situation. That's what we have to assume, that she's never experienced this kind of violence before. So the level of shock was there. Victim blaming, there's a whole issue in and of itself here in China. Just because a lot of times when things happen to women, it's like, oh, because you couldn't keep your mouth shut, so you pissed off the man. And that's why this violence escalated. Like, a lot of people are saying, like, the way she shoved him off made him lose face. It did. It doesn't mean it's her fault. You know, like, we want to analyze it as clinical as possible. So in that sense, we're going to be like, we understand that certain behaviors or certain things we do will trigger a response in the person we're dealing with, the attacker, the bad guy. It will trigger a certain response. We understand this, but we never say, okay, it's their fault. It's the woman's fault for like rejecting him this way. But we have to understand that this response or this way of speaking, this movement of the hand, this gesture, this will create that response. And that's why I say it's a very fine line in discussing this, because at the same time, we don't blame the victim, but we also have to understand the psychology behind violence escalation.
Yanina, you make a really good point in the article, which I would encourage everyone to read, and we'll link to it in the show notes, about, you know, what really is needed to prevent something like this. If we classify it, you know, as gender violence, you know, a sea change is needed, but that's not going to happen overnight. And so a lot of what you're doing and others are doing is sort of dealing with the realities of today and thinking, well, these things can happen. Let me just widen the conversation a little bit. What's your take on sort of popular culture today and how this may or may not play into attitudes and commentary as well? You know, I think I see some better representation of women in, for example, Hollywood. You know, there are more female superheroes. You know, Disney characters are sort of, you know, they've moved away from the sort of the delicate princess to kind of stronger figures, and everything from that to action movies. You know, is that a help or a hindrance? And the reason I ask that, you know, does that give the impression that you know, these superheroes can just kind of come in and overpower seven or eight attackers at will, and sort of have unrealistic expectations. What's your view on that side of things?
Well, it's definitely an improvement that the female archetype has changed from the princess who needs rescue to, you know, the woman who can take care of things herself. That's definitely a better archetype. But at the same time, here's the problem with anything Hollywood or anything fiction. You're looking to make a story that has that is easy to digest in an hour and a half or maybe one season. And there's a lot of, you have to be a hero and you have to go through this hero's journey, and how it's represented may not be as nuanced. Granted, there are better stories being told about women who struggle, how it's not easy. But at the same time, the camera demands this beautiful fight where the hero wins. Even if you look at stories like Atomic Blonde, Atomic Blonde is like very much a like Charlize Theron's character there. Her fights are not easy. She gets beaten up pretty badly in those scenes, but she still wins, and she still looks very, very cool doing it. And again, like when she's in a group of people, she knows exactly who's the bad guy, who's the good guy, who's the bystander. Sometimes it's more of those little things that get lost in the mix. The archetype itself is not so much the problem. I would like to think people are now more educated and not so easily, like, they're not so easily played by the fiction, you know, like, this is what it is, and that's what real life is going to be. We'd like to think that. But what fools them are the details. So I mentioned this in the article. It was Vaughn who actually pointed it out. My husband pointed it out. He's like, this is exact the chaos of this, where you can't tell what's going on and you're kind of lost and you're dazed. That is more common of a brawl than what you see in a movie like, say, Kingsman, where like you have the central character, Colin Firth, I believe, he's like in the middle of this mess of a situation. He knows exactly who to attack, who not to attack. And it's always like this, right? It's always so, oh, this is the barman, don't smack him. This is the waitress, you're not gonna hit her. But the reality is very, very far from that. You're gonna spend a good time like figuring things out. You'll see this in the Tung Shan video. One of the things about this woman was right after her friend, she was not being attacked for a while and her friend tried to smack the other guy with the bottle and they were on her friend. She's standing by the table, kind of dazed, and the original attacker just walks up to her relatively slowly, grabs her by the hair. She doesn't recognize it's him and then starts attacking her again. That's the level of confusion we're talking about, the what the hell is going on thing. That, I feel like those realities are more obscured by movies, and that's where the problem lies. It's more that rather than the big archetypes of what women are, what superheroes are, what you can or cannot do. It's more of that, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Yanina. And it's been so great to sort of broaden our usual horizons here. However, this is the China Sports Insider podcast, so I did want to ask you one more sport-related question before you let you go. You talked earlier about, you know, the differences between the street fighting that you try to help you know, your people guard against and when you do the training versus MMA and all the different combat sports, which have very clear rules, even if from a very, you know, outside perspective, there could be similarities there. Talk a little bit about your views on Zhang Weili. I know you got some opinions on her and, you know, what she has done for, you know, just the wider sector, whether that, you know, has that, led to an increase in your business in Krav Maga, or maybe it's more to the MMA side. But I do want to hear what your thoughts are on China's you know, top MMA star and UFC star Zhang Weili.
She almost did what Ronda Rousey early on did for UFC, the women's division in China. She made MMA so much more mainstream than any of the guys did. Yeah, there were a lot of men that were her predecessors, and yes, they brought MMA a degree of fame, but not in the way that she has. She's in a lot of gyms. You'll see her posters. Her name is almost, I would say, she's as close to a household name as an MMA star can be in China. I remember, like, when the Tung Shan incident happened, one of the comments was like, okay, if Zhang Weili was attacked, I'm pretty sure she would have beaten up all those guys. I have opinions about that. But that aside, she has done so much for this sport that nobody else has done. There are also other women like her in the sport. They're in other weight divisions in UFC, and some are in the ONE Fighting Championships, but none have shown no star has shown as brightly as her, at least not in the last few years. Whether this has translated to more women training MMA in general, it's done quite a bit for the BJJ crowd, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's more women there. There's a lot more women also in boxing and kickboxing, but they're more on the fitness. It has kind of uplifted the idea of combat sports as an option for people who want to do fitness. But sparring, there's still very far and few women, very, very few women that actually engage in full-on sparring. For us in Krav Maga, it's not brought on as much interest. It's brought on more interest for the boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, BJJ schools. They've gotten a lot more benefit out of Zhang Weili's rise than we have. But in general, like the idea of women being able to do combat has grown. Like normal people being able to do this, that's definitely become something that more women think they can do. Again, that percentage in China is relatively small to the rest of the world. It's still very much a cultural thing where sometimes boxing, kickboxing, even BJJ, it's seen as too manly. If you've ever heard the they say it in Chinese, tai men le, like it's too masculine. For a woman to do, or they will call a woman who does this like a nihanzi. So it's like you're like a manly girl. It's still, yes, there's more women, but it's still not as mainstream as it would be. Zhang Weili has more ignited people's pride in, you know, as their countrymen, as this. She's also incredibly humble and incredibly well-spoken. So it has a lot to do with why she represents so much of what they think a warrior should be. But directly to get more women to like be serious MMA fighters, that's going to be a long way off. Training these kind of things, any kind of fitness is still, I don't know how many people agree with me on this, but in our experience, fitness is still very much fad based. A lot of people will do this or this fitness fad or that fitness fad. I think now it's, I don't know, frisbee and flag football is the thing. But there's always like one, there, people swing between fads for fitness. So people, the number of people that actually stay and grow in the sport and develop in the sport outside of the actual athletes, you know, the ones that are, that go on the national team, it's not as many. So how many people become serious MMA fighters in the future that are female fighters? I wouldn't count on it growing that much, not in the way that it might grow in other countries in the West or in Europe or North America, where culturally it's a little more acceptable to do these things, or it's something that you'd be proud of.
Yanina, this in that was sense. A really an eye-opening discussion, and really enjoyed it a lot. If somebody wants to learn more about Krav Maga and they're in Beijing, how would they go about it? How will they find you?
They can go to our website, www.kmgchina, that's K-M-G-C-H-I-N-A, china.cn. And they can find information there. There's a WeChat contact. You can scan the WeChat QR code there, or the phone number's there, and they can reach us.
Thank you so much, Yanina. Really enjoyed it. Thanks to Yanina Chan, and thanks for listening to the China Sports Insider Podcast, Summer Edition. Mark and I will be back with a new interview in a couple of weeks.